Richard Neer, we are here until 10 o'clock, and this is our heavy hour here. We got two legendary player and broadcaster and everything else. Bob Costas will be coming up later on with his storied career in radio, television, and everything else. But right now, a man who should be in the Hall of Fame, the great number 17, part of the best broadcast crew, as far as I'm concerned, in television. Of course, we're talking about number 17, Keith Hernandez. Good morning, sir. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning to you. Happy Memorial Day.
Yeah, well, I got to tell you, and I've heard this from so many people, how disappointed we are that you had a big series with the Dodgers, and we're looking forward to Gary, Keith, and Ron, or at least Gary and Keith, or Gary and Ron, and none of those games. And you kind of knew this and tipped me off early when the schedule came out. But why do they do that?
Well, MLB has the final say. Hey, get down. This is my dog. He's going nuts. He wants my bottled water. They have a say. They are the emperor. So, it's money. And so you got Apple and Fox yesterday, and then ESPN last night.
Yeah. Well, I've devised a way to get around that. I put the audio on from Howie Rose on 88 and Keith, and I listen to them and try to sync it up. And sometimes, Howie will be ahead of this thing, and I'll know what's happening before the swing, and sometimes it's afterwards. But it beats – I don't want to get into knocking other broadcasts, but a lot of times they just kind of lose focus on the games. And I think the theme last night on ESPN was, oh, the poor Dodgers and their pitching. And I didn't hear them mention that Manaea and Montas, the two big money guys for the Mets, haven't thrown one pitch this year. So, the Mets have had their injuries as too.
National broadcasts are always more generic. And get down, boy. Come on, get down. sorry. They're more generic, and they come in, and it's PR. It's more PR. Naturally, the local broadcasts are going to be more up on the team. They could have mentioned, I don't know if they did, and Montas is starting rehab. So, that's a good sign. That's a start for the Mets to get someone coming back, he's beginning that process. So it's getting close to when those two guys are going to come back, and that's going to be a big shot in the arm.
Yeah, and it's going to create some issues in a way in that, you've got guys who are playing, pitching pretty well. I mean, I would think McGill might be the most vulnerable, but he came up big the other night. Certainly Peterson, God, when they needed him Saturday to give him length, he got him into the eighth inning. It's tough when Manaea and Montas come back. Who goes down and what do they do?
I think that you pretty much, I think McGill is the one that's on the bubble. I mean, Peterson, I have always liked him. Even now that he's fixed that hip surgically, he's throwing to getting the ball down in the strike zone. He's a left-hander, sinker, slider. I've always liked him. So he's pitched a big ball game. And even if he didn't, he's not going anywhere. He's one of the mainstays, and I think in the rotation. So, competition's a good thing. McGill strikes out nine guys in Boston. And he's fully aware of what's going on. So, it kind of spurns people to perform better. Like I always said, competition's wonderful.
Well, 86 Mets with Darling and El Cid and Ojeda and everybody else. I mean, it seemed like each one of them was out to prove that they belonged in that group and to pitch better than the other guy. So I think you're absolutely right. Nobody can just say, oh, it's my job, I got it made. You got to earn it, as John Houseman used to say, is to earn it. So, we got that going on. And let's talk a little bit about Mendoza in that you have to earn it with him too. When you see a guy slumping, like Alvarez is a great example. He did not start Saturday. He did not start Sunday. And I think he's sending a message to Alvarez, don't you think?
Well, one thing that Alvarez has going for him is his youth and the potential of that rookie season, which he is, you know, not it's the second year now, and he's had injuries, unfortunately. But to me, Torrens gives you a much better at bat, and whereas Alvarez is struggling and overswinging, it's the same thing he did last year. They worked on him going to right field in the off season. He had that in spring training. He was doing that, but he's kind of getting back into his old self. I don't think they're not quit on him. I just think that they're sitting him down because, you know, confidence is such an important part. And when you're not, you lose your confidence, everything speeds up. The pitcher looks like he's throwing 150 miles an hour, and the breaking ball looks like 150 miles an hour, and then you're lost. So I think they're, playing Torrens, you don't lose anything. And he's a tougher out. He's a good RBI guy, too. And he's just, he's a doubles guy. He doesn't try to hit home runs. He's a line drive hitter, and he hits the ball to all fields. And plus, he's very good defensively. He throws terrific. So I'm kind of not surprised that he's getting a little more playing time. Now we'll see how it plays out.
And the other situation that's become very interesting is third base with Vientos and Beatty. Vientos yep. made a big error in the first inning, which could have opened the floodgates. Luckily for the Mets, Taylor made an incredible play, an incredible throw to the plate to close that rally off. But, you know, you see Beatty, and I never realized what a very good defensive player this guy is. And now that he's starting to hit, there's competition at third base.
There certainly is, and they're fortunate that there's a DH because you can – you can DH Vientos if there was a pitcher hitting, and that's a real, you know, the red light's up, it was flashing for Vientos. Now, he's hitting in the 230s. He hasn't been going to right field. He's been chasing breaking balls. So for that matter, so is Pete. Pete is slumped, but we'll stick to Vientos here. Beatty's glove has been much better than I thought. It's been really good. And that's why he's getting playing time, and he's hitting. So I think that you can't sit him down. You got to play him. So I think Vientos is going to get more DH time, and they'll probably sit him down against tough right-handers that have good breaking balls because he's just been chasing.
Yeah, and you know, now you got Mauricio healthy and in Syracuse tearing it up. So, well, you know, I know they say these are good problems to have, but they, you know, there's a lot of people out there.
Well, I liked Mauricio. He impressed me before he got hurt a couple years ago, and he impressed me with his glove. He impressed me with his third base play. He's supposed to be a second baseman. And he played a heck of a third base. And now will he hit? We don't know. But I liked what I saw. So they're nice problems to have. And, it also creates a situation where you got young players. You can open up an off season, make a trade, and bring something that, you know, people are going to want these young players. How much do you want to give up? You've got an abundance, really. So can you give up one and with a veteran and get something that's really, really good in return? I mean, those are the things that general manager has to mull over.
And the tough thing with Stearns is, you know, going in, I think you expressed this doubt too, as I did and everybody, that, starting pitching, geez, I don't know about this. Now they've got the best ERA in the league. They've had that right for the whole season. You got Clay Holmes going from reliever to starter. Peterson, as you say, once the hip got fixed, he's been great. Senga has made it through. And Griffin Canning, I mean, when they got him, I said, who is this guy? I never heard of him. And he's been terrific. I mean, he's pitching maybe at an all-star potential.
Well, I just give a lot of credit to, I said it on the air multiple times, is that I think that there's a really good talent evaluation going on in that front office. And that means scouting down to that level and up to those that are making the decisions. Like you said, Canning, you look at him, he's never had great success at the Angels. And here he comes over here, and you got to give Jeremy Hefner credit. Look what he's done with Brazoban, who's been buried an obscure player. And he's been, you know, he got lost the other day. That's the first time he's had a hiccup, but he's been terrific, and he's earned high leverage, coming in high leverage situations, and he's just been great. So I give a lot of credit to the coaching staff. Excuse me, I got something in my throat. I can't get rid of it. So I up and down the from the front office to the coaching staff I'll give the analytics people credit and how they are working with the individual stuff, what is best for them. I think the Mets are very, very good at that.
Yeah, and some of it, I know you're more of an instinct feel type guy, but analytics, okay, you're throwing your slider too much, you're throwing your four-seamer, all these things that, open up the eyes of pitchers, and of course it's up to the guy to execute, but some of the things that we just take for granted that you never think about, the analytics can point out and can help you that way. So I think the Mets have found a pretty good mix between analytics and gut feel and keeping their eyes open and watching the games themselves, the eye test, as opposed to, okay, here's the script, let's follow it.
I agree with you. And also the key, too, is Canning throw strikes. I mean, you can't just get behind. And Brazoban has always been, I keep going back to him, walk too many guys. He's not walking guys. He's getting ahead. You get ahead of hitters, you've got the ace up your sleeve. You've got the hitter at disadvantage. And I've just seen over the course of the last 15 years how the game is a pitcher gets 0-2, and then the next count invariably goes to 3-2. You surrender your advantage. When a hitter gets from 0-2 to 3-2, he's having a great at bat. He's feeling good. He's even the count, even 2-2 to me, it's even. And with men on base, it gets to 3-3, then I'd say it's advantage hitter because you don't want a guy to give up a walk. And that's kind of changing now. And Canning attacks the strike zone, and he's not overpowering. We're getting away from all these guys where they just went overboard. Everybody's got to throw 100 miles an hour and throw a 93-mile-an-hour slider, and they blow their elbows out. They're wild. They're inconsistent, as opposed to the guy that comes in and knows how to pitch. No, doesn't throw hard. He pitches in, a little sinker there, a cutter here, a curveball there, changeup, fastball in. Those guys are fun to watch. And hitters today aren't used to it. They're used to these flamethrowers. If you watch them take BP, they take the coaches throw half the distance from home plate to the mound. I would hate that. They used to throw where the pitcher used to plant his plant foot when he strided home. That's where the pitchers threw BP, and they laid it in there so I can get my rhythm. So I asked hitting coaches and managers over the years, and it's because they said they want it that way because they're facing 100 mile an hour. Fastballs, and they want to be able to react to why the coach is getting that much closer. The ball's getting there faster, so it's like a 100-mile-an-hour fastball. I personally wouldn't want that in BP, but this is what the players are today, what they've been trained to do. So now, I think Pete gets befuddled when you got a guy out there that's got soft stuff and mixes it up. I think Pete has a hard time with it. And a lot of hitters, not just singling out Pete, because I think that we're making a transition back to pitching to contact. And the game is so much more fun to watch when the ball's in play. I mean, you mentioned Taylor. How many great plays has he made? He's such a smart player. He's such a good outfielder. He throws to the right base. He hustles. He's alert. He's there. He's Johnny on the spot. And he makes that play the other night, last night. And that's exciting baseball as opposed to, there's a home run, strike 3, ball 4. That's boring.
Yeah, the true outcomes. I don't know who came up with that, but I'm not a big fan of the three true outcomes here. You mentioned, Pete, the other guy we got to talk about is Soto. And I know you're a traditionalist in that the best hitter should be hitting third. And the analytics people have said, no, you've hit him second because he gets 25 more at-bats during the season, right, and that's all that kind of stuff. But there's a comfort level, too. They've moved Soto to the third spot. Good right. thing, bad thing? What are you thinking about overall about Juan Soto and his Mets debut?
I think it's a good thing to have three and four. I don't care about, I mean, I as a hitter, an RBI guy, I had the toughest at bats with the bat where no one was on base. And there's no guarantee Lindor is going to get on base in the first inning. So basically you're sacrificing. I would want to know what the percentage is, even with Lindor, who's been struggling too, by the way.
Yeah.
He's not there. He's off. So when he's off, how many times does Soto come up with no one on base in the first inning with no chance to do damage? Whereas if he's hitting third, you got two guys in front, and usually two guys that are fast, a double scores them. And you got an RBI situation. That's what I like about it. And then the same with Pete and cleanup. He's a traditional cleanup hitter. He's got three guys in front of him. And I'd like to know what the odds are at first inning, how many times, or whenever at top of the order leading off, that the fourth hitter, it's in that inning. I bet you it's a lot more than people think. And that's, I'd like that. Now, what the Mets lack is a number two hitter right now. I think it could be McNeil, but he doesn't like hitting up in the top of the order. He likes hitting down below. I remember Buck Showalter telling me that. And, you know, Nimmo's become their fifth hitter. Okay, he needs to be down there now. He's a different hitter than he was, you know, 3, 4, 5 years ago. And average is suffering because of it. But, you know, he's more of an RBI threat guy, a big threat guy. I want to see Marte play more. I want to see him play more and give him a chance. Everybody's getting down on him. He hasn't played every day. He's getting more playing time now in that two-hole. He thrived in that two-hole, if you recall, when Buck Showalter was managing.
Yes.
Now, granted, yeah, he's 2-3 years older, and he's had a serious injury, and it's affected him. But he's not used to being a platoon player. So I'm really looking for him to really get in the rhythm of playing a lot and playing a lot more. And if he gets hot and does the things that he can do, he's not a home run hitter. He knows how to hit the right field. He's a good two-place hitter, and he can run. So I'm hopeful that pans out for the Mets.
Yeah, and part of it, too, is he's become kind of a designated hitter, and you don't really know where to play him in the outfield because Soto's going to be in right. You're going to have Taylor or somebody in center, and I don't think you'd necessarily play him in left, so he's kind of DHing. And I don't know, I mean, there was no DH in the National League when you played, but I wonder how do you think you would have reacted to being a DH late in your career versus playing in the field?
Me?
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't really speak to that because I never had the experience. I don't know. You know, you read and you talk to the guys at DH, and some guys love it and some guys don't. You know, they get antsy and they got nothing to do and they only got four at bats. Like a fire drill for them. So, you know, during the game, it's four fire drills. And I really don't know if it would have been a chance for me to extend my career if I was older and couldn't play anymore. Why not? You know, that's pretty much what it does. But what's pertaining to the Mets, I want to see Torrens play a little more and I want to see Marte play a little more. And I don't like Vientos in the two-hole.
Yeah,
and we talked to Mendy about it. Mendy wants him to get more fastballs. And that's another problem, too, because if you DH Marte, then Vientos is going to sit. You're platooning, then you're going to platoon Beatty and Vientos. And you can do that. Tough left-hander sit Beatty down, but Beatty's hit lefties pretty good, too.
Yeah.
Beatty's opened up some eyes. And I think that Beatty right now it's been a big pleasant surprise, and you've got to let him play. And if you're going to play Marte, then that where's Vientos fit in? He's going to sit in the pine.
Keith, final thing. You know, this week they've got the White Sox and the Rockies. Are you guys doing the games this week?
Ronnie's got the games with the White Sox. I come back in on Friday against those wonderful Rockies, and we got to be nice to them. It's really quite an embarrassment to Major League Baseball, and they want to expand two more teams. Yeah, right. They're going to do it too. So I'll have the Rockies, then I go to L.A. for the four, and then I go to Colorado for the three in Colorado. And it's just Gary and I on the West Coast, and Gary and I over the weekend, I believe. And then Ronnie has his off break. And then I'm off again, and I'm going to go down in your neighborhood from Colorado and get the movers into my new home in Hilton Head. We're going to be neighbors.
Yeah, looking forward to that. One quick thing. You've just played a big series with the Dodgers. Then at the end, you're going to play another big series, four games in L.A., as you mentioned. Is there a natural letdown? It's like the White Sox and the Rockies. Even though you know they're major league players and any team can beat any other team in any day, but how does a player just adjust and say, hey, look, we're playing lousy teams, but we got to play hard or they can beat you?
If you're going to win and have a successful season, you got to beat up on the second division, the last place teams. You got to beat up on them. Look what the Phillies just did. They leapfrogged the Mets. They kicked Colorado's fanny. They home and away. They only lost one game against them, I think. And that's what the Mets are going to have to do. They're going to have to take advantage of these, nine games. Actually, there's six now. Well, nine games against White Sox and six against Colorado. They're going to have to 7-2. I'll take it.
Yeah, I think the next six games, you're thinking 5 out of 6. You got to hope for that, right? And one game you lose and move on from there. Okay, Keith, thank you so much for joining us. Clear up your throat there. Say hi to Kai and McDuff, and we will see you in person very, very soon.
All right, Richard.
Have a good night. Okay, or a good afternoon, or a good morning, or wherever we are in the day here. I'm a little confused myself. Bob Costas will be joining us shortly. Stick around on The Fan.